Good afternoon, and welcome to our special interactive conversation. It's total delight and pleasure to be speaking to you again. And I want to say that most of this call, most of this time together will be actually conversations with between you guys. And then what we'll do is we'll break into triads. And at a certain point, Deb will tell you how to do that. You'll discuss the question that I'm going to give you for 15 minutes. You'll get a little signal before the 15 minutes is up, so you'll have time to wind up. Then we'll dissolve that group. We'll come back, share whatever you'd like to share from your conversation with all of us. And then you'll get another question and another opportunity to talk. And then at the end, we'll have some Q&A if there are any questions that anyone still has. So we're going to begin, as we always do, by chanting and meditating. And so please find yourself a comfortable posture. Feel the connection of between the sitting bones and the rest of the whatever it is that you're sitting on. Feel the breath flowing in down to the base of the posture and then flowing out up to the crown. Bring your awareness into the heart. And we'll chant our salutation to Krishna Madhava, who is supreme bliss, whose grace makes a dumb person eloquent and lets a cripple cross mountains. Mukham karoti vachalam bhangam langayate giram yatkripatamaham vande paramanandamadavam. Mukham karoti vachalam bhangam langayate giram yatkripatamaham vande paramanandamadavam. So, feeling first of all into the energy inside your body mind right now. Noticing those parts of the body that are tight or tense. Noticing any tiredness. Noticing any attitudes or thoughts or anticipations that have come with you from the day. And just using a moment or two to tune into yourself, to notice where you are now, how you feel, non-judgmentally, of course, just being present to the experience of this moment. Now begin to breathe in with the feeling that you're breathing in Krishna's energy, having the sense of light, love, open spaciousness, just the felt sense of presence flowing in through the crown of the head, flowing down through the body, as far down into the belly as possible, and then flowing back up to the heart with the exhalation. And we'll meditate with the mantra today. So as the breath flows in, allow it to flow in with Om Namo Narayanaya. Let the breath flow up out into the heart with Om Namo Narayanaya. So every breath brings in the mantra and the sense of Krishna into the body. Every exhalation allows that energy and the sound of the mantra to flow up into the heart. And you can open your eyes if you like, or keep them closed. So again, it's really wonderful to have another opportunity to be together. And I want to say I've been very much enjoying the notes that have been coming from some of you. So I just want to take a moment or two to kind of take us back into the vortex of the Gita by actually sharing, or I'd say re-looking at some of the very core teachings of the text, so that we, you know, kind of bring ourselves back into it. The teachings of the Gita, though, of course, it's full of amazing insights and gifts and expositions of yogic truths. But essentially, the thing to recognize above all about the Gita is that it is a text of yoga. And, you know, it's the reason that the chapters are each called the yoga of one thing or another, starting with the yoga of the despondency of Arjuna and then ending with the yoga of renunciation, although it's the unique renunciation of Krishna and that Krishna is asking of Arjuna. If you remember in the last chapter, the chapter that we practiced with last week, Krishna kind of reiterates the main teachings. And the first teaching that he speaks of, and a teaching that, you know, really has come to be known, I believe, as the most famous teaching in the Gita, is the teaching about how we should perform all of our appropriate activities, which, as he's explained many times in the course of the text, means those activities that are fitting for us as individual beings, that are also good, basically good actions, dutiful actions, actions according to your dharma, your duty. So what Krishna says is that actions should be performed appropriately, skillfully, as offerings, without attachment to the fruits. And he says that our actions, our understanding about what life is, and our understanding about who we are, is always conditioned by which of the gunas, which of the qualities of nature, is operating in us. And at the same time, he says, and this is the culmination of the text, he says, whatever you do, whatever you think, whatever you eat, whatever you wear, whatever you love, whatever you aspire to, everything that you do, say, and consider in your life, do it as an offering. Do it as, in the old Indian religious sense, do it as a sacrifice, an offering of the best that you can offer to me, Krishna, which Krishna being the self, the divine, sacred consciousness, love, that is the basis of all that is. And as you of course remember, in the course of explaining the path of yoga to Arjuna, Krishna essentially says that there are three basic approaches, that all of which will take you to the highest goal, as well as making sure that your life here is okay. And these are the path of knowledge, the path of action, or karma yoga, and the path of love and devotion, or bhakti yoga. And part of the brilliance of the Bhagavad Gita is that Krishna insists that we need all three paths to be fully integrated in order to experience the truth that he's offering, that he's teaching Arjuna. So that short introduction, we're going to start into our first breakout group. And I'm very, also very, very happy that we're doing this, because of course, as so many of you have said, part of the greatness of this Sangham is the insight that each of you brings to it and that each of you shares. Some of you are have been very willing to share in the listserv. Some of you have just been too busy or shy or felt that you didn't have anything to say. I mean, there are so many reasons why we don't share on the listserv. I understand, I deeply understand, being someone who tends to not share on listserv myself, that you can be fully immersed in the class and not be drawn to writing out a note to the Sangham. So this is the moment when those of you who are here have the opportunity to just talk to each other and talk about some of these extraordinary teachings and your own experience of them with your friends, with your peers. So our breakout groups will be triads. There will be three people in each group. Deb is going to give you the instructions. But right now, I want to give you the question. So the first question that we'll be practicing with is Krishna's teaching to Arjuna right in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, where he says, you have a right to your actions alone, but not to their fruits. So let not the fruits of action be your motives, nor engage in non-action. So, again, you have a right to action alone, but not to its fruits. So let not the fruits of action be your motives, nor set your heart on inaction. So the question that we're going to discuss in our first breakout, is what does it mean to let go of the fruits of your actions in your life? How do you do it? How do you let go of the fruits of your actions, or at least practice letting go of the fruits of your actions? How do you do it? Do you do it by letting go? Do you do it by offering? What's the process, and what has been your experience of recognizing that you cannot set your heart on any particular outcome and doing your actions without attachment to the fruits? An incredibly powerful and profound contemplation. So Deb?
Yes. Hi, everybody. So I'm going to create the breakout groups, and then I'm going to hit a tone, and then you'll be into your groups of three, and you can speak with one another, but you're not going to hear anybody else. And then I'll give a tone about 1 minute, about at 14 minutes, and then we'll just bring everybody back in to where we'll dissolve the groups, and everybody can come back in for a discussion, and you'll be on. Your mic will be live. So, and at any time you want to mute your mic in case you're just being quiet on the call, you can hit *6 and that'll mute yourself. So you should hear a tone when I get you all broke up and you can begin speaking, and you just speak, and maybe you want to introduce yourself in the group. So it'll be just a second here. And the timer has started. So I'd suggest everybody introduce themselves, and you can discuss the question. Sally.
Deb?
Oh, good. I think we're in a private group
I
now,
got up.
so.
Yeah, I hopefully we are.
So,
I got on. Wait, it looks to me like I'm.
We're in a private group. It has
Oh, okay.
the negative ones there, so. But I don't know because we're a presenter and an assistant. I guess we'll find out.
Yeah, we're presenting it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Wait a second.
We've got about 8 minutes left, and I guess people will tell us if they heard us talking or not.
Okay.
So we'll know.
Okay, great.
Yes.
So if you could just put us in a private group, if that's possible, whenever we do the breakout.
Okay.
If that works.
Okay.
All
right. We'll be quiet for the.
Oh,
we got about
no,
7 minutes left.
Okay. Actually, you don't need to do that. I'll just text you if we
okay.
think anything. So we're
okay.
We're good. Okay.
That
ahead.
Sounds good. All right. Bye. Everyone, we've got about a minute and a half left, and I know we've had some callers jump on the line. Just please hold on. We're in breakout sessions right now, and we'll get you in the next group. All right.
You have one more minute.
Okay, folks, dissolving the groups now.
So, welcome back. And this would be actually a really great moment if anyone would like to share what you discussed or what happened in the group that was interesting or raised questions for you. So, if anyone would like to start off, you can raise your hand, and Deb will recognize you, and we'll all be able to hear you.
To raise her hand. I'm hoping so. Hold on a sec, people, I'm sorry. If someone wants to just speak, I can go ahead and we'll have you speak. One second. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm trying to find out how to raise your hand. Oh, you can raise your hand by pushing any key 1 through 5.
And somebody better raise your hand.
Oh, there we go. Okay. Okay. Hold on. I'm gonna put Wendy on unmute in public. Wendy, thank you.
Hey.
So can you hear me now? Can anybody hear
yes.
me?
Yes.
Hear you.
Thank you for
okay.
your patience.
Yeah. Anyway, technology seems like it should be so easy, but it hardly ever is. Anyway, our group was lovely, and we all sort of shared sort of more similar stories than different about, I mean, I think the crux of it, at least how I was listening, was just this idea of how this, when you can get this concept of, you know, when you can flow into the work but not want anything from things, like not expect it to count out a certain way, not be measuring the work by what you think should get or what other people should get. There's this flow, and for me that's really just intimately entwined with this idea of not being the doer. So sometimes I was saying how I would like just literally just walk around repeating out loud to myself, I am not the doer, I'm not the doer. And just like not having to carry it all is the place where I could release sort of this idea that it has to happen how I want. And so all the people in my group were sort of sharing stories that kind of reflected that, I think.
Great. That's beautiful. So thank you, Wendy. And someone else? Experience, recognition, wisdom of any kind that came out of the group? Someone else?
Please just hit any number between 1 and 5. And oh, we've got somebody. Aaron. Go ahead, Aaron.
Hi. My group, one of the things we discussed was just having the idea or the attitude that whatsoever happens is being led by Krishna, or is being held by Krishna, and is being led essentially to its destination, and having attachments it just gets in the way. Or I'm just going to use an example of something that I noticed today. I had taken some pictures of flowers that were by the train or near my house, and I was just walking through that place today, and you know, was just sort of, you know, focused on something else, and looked around and noticed that all of those flowers that I had taken pictures of were bulldozed. They were gone completely.
Oh, wow.
And I felt that, like, wow, like, you know, I had a moment with these flowers, and just like that, they're gone. So to me, that was, that really drove it home that, yeah, everything passes here. Nothing is set in stone. So really to have expectations that anything should last, or that anything should turn out a certain way, it just was going to lead to disappointment. And that really was what that drove home for me.
Yeah, it's a big radical recognition when it just comes up for you like that. Yeah, beautiful. Thank you, Aaron. Anyone else? And I think also, if anyone has, you know, an experience of struggling with this idea, which I know is not all that easy for humans, you could share how that works also. Or in fact, anything that came out of the group that you feel would be nice for us to hear. Any key from 1 to 5?
Susan.
Am I on?
Yes,
you're on.
Well, my group kind of started out unanimously talking about how this practice encourages us to stay in present moment awareness, that if we're not focused on anything in the future that might come, the way to do that so easily is to totally accept the present moment as it's unfolding in non-doership, just witnessing, feeling, experiencing it at all levels. And everybody kind of started out that is how they approach this teaching.
Great. And did anything, that's of course brilliant practice. So did anything come up around that was surprising or that you found illuminating that you'd like to share with us, other than the fact that practice of itself is going to change your life?
Yeah, I wish I had something brilliant to say, but we all kind of, that's where we were.
Yeah, no, that's great. Thank you. That's great. And it really is a very powerful, as some people say, gold star practice for letting go of doership. So thank you, Susan. And if anyone
has... Somebody, yep, We have Christine.
Okay.
Christine, you're live.
Yes.
Hi, Sally. This is kind of awkward, but hi.
We'll get used to it.
I shared a little bit of my path, but I was speaking to someone who's brand new to the Sangha. Like, this is her first class, and what she said was so beautiful and so profound. I mean, I still got almost shivers going through me. And I wanted to encourage her to raise her hand. She works in hospice, and she shared how her work has affected, you know, this process for her. And if she wants to raise her hand, I don't want to make her uncomfortable, but wow. You know, it was like a taste of what Aaron said, you know.
Yeah. So
just give her a moment if she's willing. She was not shy, so
we'll hold space for you to raise your hand. And is that Monique? Hi.
Hi, this is me. This is Monique.
Yeah,
you can hear me?
Yes, not the world's best connection, but we can hear you. So speaking to the phone.
We had a lovely discussion around the non-doership and the present moment, and we were talking about how we kind of try to get there, and basically we were talking about surrendering. If we can just learn to surrender and let the doer do his thing and get out of his way, get out of Krishna's way, it's just going to flow and it's going to be all right. And you won't have to put so much effort into everything you do and try to get the results, the goals or objectives that we strive for so hard in our daily activities and actions. So it's all a question of perhaps surrendering was maybe what we have to learn at the end of the day.
Monique, I heard about half of what you said, which I think has something to do with the device you're on. What I heard was great. I don't know if others could not hear. But I just like to, if you're on the computer and speaking into the computer, it's really good to get as close as possible to the computer mic.
Yeah, I am on a computer, and I am very close, so maybe it's just on my computer.
Okay. Okay, great. So it's interesting talking into the computer. It's a little bit like having a voice recognition scrambler on, but I think we've heard a lot of what you said. Yes.
Yeah, and I was just going to say, we have another person. Loring's got his hand up. And I'm just making public.
Okay. Hey, Loring.
Well, good evening. Good evening.
Good evening.
Thank you so much for doing this program. My partner, Catherine, and I both agreed that it sounds like a wonderful concept to make an offering out of whatever one is doing, and it's very easy to forget about that. Also, the idea of giving up the fruits of your labor, in practice, I'm going to have to rewire my brain. Everything that I do usually has some cause and effect situation where I can't quite give it I have to remember to give it as a gift. Maybe I'm not in a position to do that all the time, but I think this is a wondrous practice, but as I say, this is going to take a while to get used to.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. This is a wonderful practice, and let's say it's it tends to be honored more in the breach than in the observance, which is a phrase that I love. It's very hard to do. And I have a friend who, during one period of his life, he was working as a waiter in a Catskills hotel. And he kept saying, you know, it's very hard to give up the fruits of your actions when the fruits are tips. And of course, it's really true that somehow giving up the fruits of your actions should not and cannot be doing everything, you know, doing your work without charging for it, doing everything as a volunteer service, because we all have livelihood issues. And I think the question is, how do you do this when you're obviously accepting compensation for what you do? And, you know, and because, as you say, cause and effect operate really whether you're looking for the fruits or not. Right? I mean, that's one of Krishna's main points. So the question of how you do this appropriately.
Especially in a complicated world that we live in.
Yes, exactly. And especially with, you know, I mean, there are so many questions of what the fruits of actions are, including, you know, getting credit for your good deeds, you know, getting credit for what you contribute in the office, you know, receiving gratitude from your children. I mean, there are so many things that, you know,
right.
bring up this year. So, yeah, it's, you're absolutely right. It's not always easy. Lauren, do you have more to say?
That's it. It's just that it sounds simple, but in practice, it's complicated.
Yeah, simple but not easy. And I think that's pretty much true of every single teaching that Krishna gives. At least that's my experience reading the Gita. It's you go, okay, this is really, you know, I really get the point of this. You know? And, oh my God, the gap between knowing what we should do and actually being able to practice it moment by moment is large.
Well, I'd always thought of the Bhagavad Gita as kind of a lightweight guide for spirituality. But now that I'm into it, it seems that, wow, this thing is really deep.
Yeah, it is.
I would love for you to continue. I see now I'm completely hooked. I really feel the depth of it. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm so glad to hear you say that. I think a lot of us have had that, you know, have had that recognition from studying the Gita. Because it's a kind of easy, you know, it's an easy text to read. It's not like trying to read the Shiva Sutras or the Pratyabhijna Hridayam where, you know, it's mysterious. Although, of course, it is. You know, it's, but it's the nitty-gritty.
Absolutely.
So that's great.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lauren, and thank you for thank you all for what you're coming up with and what you're sharing. So we're going to go into another breakout, and this session is allied to the earlier question. As you can see, we're kind of going through the fundamental teachings. So, Krishna says again and again and again, better is your swadharma, your own dharma, your own correct activity in every situation, even badly done, than the dharma of another done well. So we're going to break up into another three dyads. And again, what does this mean to you? How have you been able to practice it? And part of understanding this question, or like looking at this question in my experience, is what has happened in your life that eventually you have realized was the result of your trying to practice somebody else's dharma or a dharma that was not right for you. So the verse is, you know, the great famous teaching is, better your own dharma, your swadharma, even if inferior or difficult or, you know, not prestigious, than the dharma of another, the duty of another person or of a different kind of person performed well. How have you experienced this? And why do you think from your own experience that it's better to practice your own duty, your own dharma? And while we're at it, you know, you're very free to define swadharma for yourself and each other in the group. So does anybody have any questions about what the topic of discussion is before we break out, before Deb puts us into groups?
Just raise your hand.
Raise your hand. Okay, I'm not. Okay, Bruce?
No, I don't.
Bruce, your hand is raised, so you can speak if you want to. Okay, Bruce's hand was raised, but he didn't know.
Okay.
Oh,
okay.
There you are again.
Oh, I didn't see
Bruce,
his hand raised.
And Bill has his hand raised. Or maybe it's just...
Okay.
So
thank you, everybody, for your patience with our technology here. So I'm going to put everybody in groups. You won't be in the same group that you were in previously. And when you hear the tone, you can begin speaking, and you have 15 minutes. So have
a... Introduce yourself.
You have one more minute.
All right, folks, we're going to come back to the group.
Okay, so thank you all and welcome back. So we're going to have another session of sharing with the larger group what occurred in your conversation that you would like to share. And I think one of the things we saw from the last post-breakout sharing is that every group comes up with, I mean, many groups, I'm sure that's not every group, I'm sure there's, you know, a lot of us are coming to the same realizations, but there are many different kinds of realizations. So who would like to be the first person to share? You can press one key 1 to 5 and raise your hand.
Yep, Catherine.
Hi. So what came up just now at the very end of the group was I was saying that because of the circumstances in my life right now, I have not been able to be the kind of student that I normally like to be. And so this issue of feeling like I couldn't, and then just offering that and offering the best that I could to the course of doing the homework and then being open to receiving the blessings of the transmission through you, Sally, to all of us that were attending. So it's been a really big prasad because I haven't been able to earn it the way I normally do when I'm a student.
That's a beautiful, subtle point. That is to say, when for whatever reason we can't fully immerse ourselves in the task to be able to offer our best and just to say this is the best I can do and then receive the fruits that come. That's very beautiful.
Yeah.
Yes, go ahead, please.
Well, there's just another thing I wanted to add is I heard one time that somebody asked George Bernard Shaw if there was anybody he would have liked to have been. And he said, yes, I would have liked to have been George Bernard Shaw.
Oh, fabulous. Yes. Yeah. Exactly. And there's the Hasidic version of that. You know, the great Rabbi Zusia said once, if on the day of judgment, God asks me whether I was good at this and being a good person, what I know that God will ask me, I'm blowing the quote, is were you able to be fully Zusia? So it's a profound realization. So thank you.
Indeed. Thank you.
So, someone else have something you'd like to bring for us from that very pregnant topic? Leela, I see a green. So, Deb, I'm turning this over to you.
I'm turning this over to you.
So, Charlene or Leela?
We have
said hiya.
Hello.
Hiya.
Oh, yes. Hi. Can you hear
Hi.
Me?
Hi.
Hi, Sally.
Hi.
Sally.
Hi.
Hi. Nice to see you. By
nice.
The way,
yes.
Yeah.
I'm meeting so many of the meditation participants through these breakout groups. It's wonderful. First and foremost, Sally, when you just said the quote about Sushia, it sent a shiver down my spine because I get a thought for the day from the Blue Mountain Center, and that
uh-huh.
was the exact quote.
Uh-huh.
It was from
oh
the
God.
Bhagavad Gita and
oh
the and the story. Yes. You know, where Lord Krishna is saying, I look upon all creatures equally. None are less dear to me and none more dear. But those who worship
beautiful.
Me with love live
beautiful.
In me and I come to life in them. And then they have the story of, you know, the Hasidic Rabbi Sushya. It's so first and foremost, wow. Talk about serendipity. What we were talking in our lovely group about Swadharma, Sally, which was just so poignant and relevant, you know, our group was Alice, Anne, and myself, and we were talking about how this concept of Swadharma is not just once or twice in a lifetime decision, but this concept of Swadharma can inform us even for simple decision-making or decision-making in the present moment. And Anne shared a situation that, you know, where she had to make a decision this week. And she was talking about how this concept of Swadharma would make things easier for us to make a decision. And I was sharing a couple of instances. Of course, there was a life-changing decision when Swadharma played a role when I was hospitalized with pneumonia, and it was such a wake-up call for me to really look deeply and see whether the path I was on, which was in the world of finance, was really fulfilling my dharma, or was it taking me away from my path in life. And it was a clear wake-up call. It was so clear back then that no, the answer was a clear no. And the universe, you know, gave me the experience of becoming very sick with pneumonia for me to realize that. And then my life changed course in terms of how I started living my dharma or making a living. That's on the big, that was like a big decision making. But there was an instance this week when I too was faced with, should I go attend this, you know, mandala making workshop? It sounds beautiful. It's going to be an amazing class. But yet I had just come back from, you know, a few days of vacation and had all these things I was supposed to do and get back to people on. And, you know, the answer was very clear, even though it was a bright, shiny object I wanted to go.
Uh-huh.
It was very clear.
Uh-huh.
And, it, you know, that, no, I had to, you know, I had to fulfill my obligations and then look into, you know, maybe attending a class later in this year. So I love this concept where if it comes into our consciousness, it can help us with big decisions, but also little decisions.
Yes, that's, Sandhya,
yes,
that's great. You guys
Sandhya,
are great.
That's great. You guys are great.
I'm hearing an echo.
Thank you, Sally.
Thank you, Sandhya, and thank you so much, Alice and Anne, Bhamini. It's great. So,
we have.
So Deb, what we got?
Yeah, we're gonna. I'm gonna put Bill. Bill.
Okay, am I there? Here, hello.
Bill.
Hi. Interesting on Dharma. Our conversation went right into the Dharma of taking care of a dying parent. And,
oh wow.
Yeah, and how, you know, it can be so enveloping that you. You know, we make this choice, we're going to see this through, this is my dharma to help here, and yet you feel you're getting lost in their dharma as well, and it becomes very challenging. And then it turned into the, you know, seeing it through, even though it's so challenging and you feel maybe lost in it, maybe this is their dharma or my dharma, but getting to the other side of it is a liberating experience where you can come back. And somehow it seemed like the realization in the group was, you know, okay, now who am I? You get it was very liberating. But I guess just recognizing the real challenge, you know, and in that situation and really honoring that in people. And I think then we ended up saying, okay, in this very moment, sitting in this chair where I am today, you know, do I feel there's an expansionary energy in my life? Am I in my Dharma? You know, and letting go of the success and failure that contracts it so much. And I know I'm going through that now where, okay, let's make this an offering. And I do feel expansive in some new things I'm doing. How do we check in the moment and in the bigger pictures about, you know, is the energy here supporting this or is it not? And it was a very beautiful, very potent conversation. So that's all I've got. It's great to be here.
That sounds like an amazing conversation. And I've had that experience myself, and so I know exactly. It's like, oh my God, what have I committed myself to? And yet, it's your Dharma, it's your Swadharma in that moment. And also, your point about success and failure, I think, is really critical. Since in our society, we tend to believe that success or failure, so to speak, in society's terms, is a measure of how well we're doing our Dharma. And Krishna, of course, is saying no. It's not about that. So thank you. And this is a very, I would say this conversation is probably one that we can go on doing for the rest of our lives, right? Having this conversation, asking this question. So who'd like to?
We have Loring. He is now live. Okay. Loring.
Hi, Loring.
Well, hi again.
Hi again.
Had an interesting session with Karen and Catherine, or Kanu and Catherine. And I'm just reflecting about how many false starts we have all made. Now, Krishna, Arjuna, you know, it's a question of, am I going to be a warrior or am I going to be a sheep herder? That's, you know, in a very simple world, that might be a serious question. But all of us have had so many false starts, you know, starting with education, college. You know, how many of us really we're just following our parents' ideas about ourselves, our socialized mind, and finally getting out of that and getting into Buddhism and then going on from there that really saved my life. But I think in our complicated world, we probably all had so many false starts, and hopefully we are now at a place where we recognize that we're in the right place. Like I feel the Bhagavad Gita is a revelation, and I felt very much at home and so happy that I stumbled into that.
Oh, so beautiful. Well, you didn't stumble, of course. You were drawn, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. No, that's, yes, so true. We've all had to deal with these questions of, is this my Dharma? Is this what I've been given by my family or society? And I think that, you know, one of the big differences between the way we experience this issue and the way they did in Krishna and Arjuna's time is that we have those choices, which both makes the question complicated and makes it especially beautiful, right? Because it's, you know, Arjuna's Dharma was in a certain sense given to him. It was clear from the beginning what his
right.
Dharma was.
Right.
Not so true necessarily for us. So yeah, it's beautiful and complex.
Thank you.
Thank you. So who do we have?
I don't see anybody else with their hands raised.
Okay. I do see some hands raised, but I guess that they were false alarms. So we'll go, unless someone, you know, has a sudden impulse to speak, we're going to go on to our next breakout. And isn't this word breakout so interesting? It's like, and it's breakout, breakup, and many allied words that have multiple meanings. So I want to talk about some of what Krishna says in chapter 17 as part of the discussion about sattva, rajas, and tamas. So this is verse 2 of chapter 17. He says, the conviction of embodied beings is of three kinds, born of their nature. It is sattvic, rajasic, or tamasic. And then I want to read Aurobindo's translation of this, which I found actually very helpful in understanding it from my own point of view. So he translates it like this. The conviction, Sanskrit is shraddha, which is usually translated as faith. But as he points out, it's faith has a number of meanings that are not so helpful in our understanding. So the conviction of each person takes the shape given to it by his or her, the stuff of his or her being. The soul of a human being is made of shraddha, a conviction, a faith, a will to be, a belief in itself and existence. And whatever is that will, faith, or constituting belief, he or she is that, and that is she or he. So we'll just take a minute and let that sink in. There are three kinds of conviction, or three general kinds of conviction we can have. We can have sattvic, tamasic, or rajasic, faith or conviction. How do you know at any given moment or whether the conviction that you're holding is your most sattvic, your rajasic, or your tamasic? You know, most of us, as we've done these contemplations, have kind of to some extent gotten to know what it feels like to be in a sattvic state, a rajasic state, and a tamasic state. We each have our own version. So in terms of your faith, your conviction, your belief in yourself and the nature of the world, that conviction that you live by, basically, when are you in your most sattvic belief space or conviction or faith space? When do you find yourself in the rajasic and when in the tamasic? So we're going to break out into a new group. Does anyone have any questions about the question that I'm suggesting before we break out? You can raise your hand if there's any unclarity in the assignment.
We have Kenny has a question.
Okay.
Yes, thanks. I'm not sure what you mean by in any situation. Is it a belief or a situation that we're in that...
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Yes. So, okay, thank you. So let's say that when you wake up in the morning or when you have to face a decision or when you're tuning into yourself in any moment, not so much in an external situation, but in a moment when you recognize what it is that matters to you, what it is that you believe is true. I mean, as an example, when I'm in a sattvic mood, in a sattvic state, my conviction is that I am the self, I am consciousness. When I'm in a more rajasic state, my conviction is that I am Sally, and I am capable of the task I'm about to give to do or not. But my main belief is in my existence as an individual with goals and processes. When I'm in a tamasic state, essentially my conviction, you know, if I'm really deeply honest, my conviction is nothing matters, or I'm not worthy. So that's my experience of my conviction about myself and reality in different states of the gunas. So does that help answer your question?
Yeah, it does. I initially heard situations.
Right, and I said situations. And yeah. So I meant internal situations, not so much external situations.
Yeah, that's really helpful.
Okay, so thank you. And thank you for raising that. Any other questions? I know this is kind of a subtle point.
Catherine,
do you have a question?
A question.
Yeah.
Sally, could you repeat the question again?
Yes. In different internal situations, like different states you find yourself in, can you look at the conviction that you're holding when you're feeling you're at your most sattvic, when you're feeling rajasic, or when you're feeling particularly tamasic? So what is your conviction about yourself and about the point of life and about the future of humanity, all those issues that, that determine your mood, your state, and also your sense of who you are.
Sure. Okay.
So
you.
Is that clear? What I'm asking you to do is identify what convictions you hold when you're in a sattvic state, when you're in a rajasic state, or when you're in a tamasic state, and it may not be just one for each.
Great, thank you.
Okay, thank you. So was your question answered, or are you just saying, are you just yesing me? you...
A little of both.
Oh, okay.
No, it's clear. So what's clear is that I'm looking at what, this must be really up for me because, what you're saying is just flying out of my head.
So in other words, okay. So what do you believe is true about yourself in the world when you're feeling sattvic? What do you believe is true about yourself in the world when you're feeling rajasic? And what do you believe when you're feeling tamasic? And again, it's not probably only one thing.
Got it.
So if you've really got it, and I hope you do, hopefully if you... We can go into the breakouts and you guys will find some interesting way to talk about it, even if you're not exactly sure what the question is. Because what you're really talking about is the gunas and your own conviction about yourself and the world, which is, speaking for myself, realizing how much my faith, belief, conviction changes according to how the gunas are playing in me was pretty revelatory. So I'm hoping it is for you too. So, Deb?
Okay. Are you ready? All right. You guys are on the clock.
You have one more minute.
Welcome back, everybody. Sally?
Sorry, I had my mute button on, so thank you. So who would like to share? Who'd like to speak to us about what occurred in your group and what you or what you realized or all of the above?
We have Gail.
Gail.
Hi. This was such a great question. And in our group, we looked at, like, someone had something come up that was tamasic. And so we looked at what that saying, what her feelings would be in the tamasic realm, in the rajasic, and in the sattvic. And so it was like, if I catch myself feeling tamasic, then I could actually pause and go, well, what would it be like to be in the rajasic? Or what would it be like to be in the sattvic? And then we also looked at what do I want? And that would be like a way of identifying what I want the fruit to be, and then can I let that go? And then the third thing we looked at was coming up above all three of the gunas, and can I feel detachment? Can I feel surrender? And it feels like something I personally want to play with more and see if I can put it more into practice in my life of looking at things more and catching them, so to speak, you know, without the ego driving them.
Yeah, or even just recognizing when the ego is driving them, that that you know you don't have to be at the mercy of the particular egoic states, which is. So that sounds like an amazing and fruitful conversation. So, and you know, and I agree with you. That question, as a self-inquiry question, is really, really helpful. You know, what do I believe about myself in this state, and what is it, and can I be the witness? So, thank you. So, Gail, if you have nothing else to say, we'll see who else speaks.
And we have Kanu.
Hi, Kanu.
Hi, Sally. I have loved this class. I want to keep going and going and going. So
I know.
That's just
we
incredible.
Should all just keep going, so.
The class before the last one, you talked about the nuances of the gunas. And I loved that, and it really shed a light on things for me. And so in our group just now, it was fantastic. Each of us, took time, and we each presented for ourselves. So it wasn't like a back-and-forth conversation. We just each had what we felt, and we just shared it with each other. And what came up for me is really the nuance of each of those things. So when I'm in tamasic, because sometimes I really have some health challenges, it's like I need to give in, like my learning is the nuance of giving into a tamasic state and just like letting myself do nothing and be like, just be still, just like not have to think, not have to do, not, and just be just pretty much tamasic. And it's like calling and begging me to be there. And then in rajasic, for me, the nuance is the difference between when I'm in flow in rajasic and, you know, all the things that I'm doing are just a flow of one thing to another and it all works. And then the other time is I'm just the doer. I got to do more. I'm on my task list. I'm the doer. Got to get it done. Do, right? And then the third one in sattvic, and this is, and maybe it's a matter of age, and, you know, I'm talking about it, and I feel my heart opening so much with this, is being able to have those experiences of sattvic states, of spaciousness, and expanded awareness, and just feeling so connected, and I'm just very grateful for that. I don't want to keep going on. I really want to thank you so much.
Oh, and we thank you for just sharing that so articulately. I think that the capacity to be in a sattvic state kind of was a result of your practice, and I suspect a lot of other people are recognizing that the fruit of practice is being able to be in spaciousness or many other things, but thank you. Thank you. That was beautifully said. So Deb?
We have Loring.
Hi, Loring.
Hi, Sally. I think I've got the answer to my own question. I was going to ask you about craving it, and I see that as a rajasic element.
Yeah.
I'm not really hungry, but I really want something.
Yes. Yes. In fact, Krishna defines craving as rajasic. And so, you know, craving is actually the underpinning of rajas guna.
Yeah,
I want it.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
And we have Dan now.
Hi, Dan.
Dan, can you take yourself off mute? You might have put yourself on mute.
Okay. Dan, can you get yourself heard? So I think let's move on, and maybe Dan can find, maybe you can find your unmute button and come back. So is there anyone else who'd like to share something of that conversation?
Wendy.
Yeah, hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
So Sally, I just want to express my gratitude as well, and not only to you and the miraculous ways that you hold all of us, but just the sort of feeling part of this tribe of light has been so healing, and I'm actually really sad that it's going to end. I was so happy that there was one more. I just wish there'd be one more and one more. I really have just gained so much from listening and reading other people's leaps and just the raw bravery, and really inspired my own kind of quest. And so anyway, I just really bow down to all of you, and I feel badly because in this last group we had to talk about all my problems about trying to overcome my tamasic with rajasic qualities, and everybody was super helpful, and I think maybe hurt themselves in it. And there was so many amazing posts about these qualities of how we try to sort of work with, you know, with one to compensate for the other. And so I didn't feel alone as I was sort of reading through all that. And really, actually, that's one of the great gifts of your work, Sally, and these courses that were like literally spread all over the world, and yet were none of us alone. So that is a real miracle. So thank you.
Yes, yes.
Again.
Wendy, thank you. Thank you. And thank you for everything you contribute in this way, because you contribute a lot, as do all of you. So, yeah, one of the great miracles of these classes is you guys and the conversation, which is so rich. And especially for those of us who don't have a huge group of, you know, satsang friends, it's so amazing to be in this conversation with each other and with me. You know, for me, it's amazing also.
We have Christine.
Christine? Hey,
hi, Sally. Hi. Hello?
Hello, we're here.
Oh, okay.
We're listening.
Okay, hi, Sally. Hi, everybody. As Wendy was talking, I found tears welling up in my eyes, too, with gratitude for you, Sally, and your teaching, for everybody in the Sangam, for having the opportunity on the listserv to share and be supported and to get feedback from others. When we were doing this this exercise, I'm just kind of in overwhelming gratitude right now for what I saw, because I had to go into the past to look at what it used to be for me. When I was tamasic, it was like I don't matter, and I'm not safe in the world, and I'm not supported. And like today was kind of a tamasic day. The energy was like that, but there was none of that there. I was just slowed down a little bit, and same thing with Rajasic. It's just what a beautiful little bow to tie on the gift of this class that at least I get to see, and everybody else in my group was saying it too, how much we've been transformed by it. So thank you.
Well, sweetheart, yes, I know. I'm awed, humbled, amazed, delighted to feel how powerfully these teachings have worked in everybody's psyche as we've been studying it together. It's such a testament to the power of your practice, and also, of course, above all, to the Shakti, the energy that moves through Krishna's teaching. It's really fantastic. So thank you. And let's all receive that gift, that it's a beautiful, beautiful. You know, I almost feel as though in the Bhagavad Gita, all of these great sages have left their own gifts, you know, from their own study and teaching. And all of it added to the original gift of the dialogue itself. So in a certain sense, we're getting to eat the fruits of all these years of practice and teaching and hearing and acting through these teachings. It's really extraordinary, and I'm so grateful myself for the experience I've had in this class with all of you and with your insights. It's as Nineshwar likes to say, being with you and reading the Gita together, it's like adding fragrance to gold. It's so exquisite. So thank you.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Thank you, Sally.
So I think we have one more hand.
Yep, we have Phyllis. One second, Phyllis. And you're live, Phyllis.
Okay. well,
I'm echoing everything that Christine was saying, and beautiful Wendy. And I had a very sophic conversation with Sandhya, and I realized how much the connection is part of sattva for me, that connection that we all have and that I experienced in those moments with her, and the sharing of the love we have for you, Sally, and for the teaching and the gratitude. Yeah, it's just beyond words. I think that I'm like Christine, that I have a hard time now finding that place where I say to myself, you're no good, you're not worthy, nothing matters. And I lived a lot of years in that place, and it's stunning to see the difference now. So most of my activity is in the Rajasic and a lot in the Sattvic, because how could I not with 10 years of being with you, Sally, and with the Sangam? So grace is one of the biggest factors that I'm aware of. And when I'm able to be in a sattvic mood, I know that that is very connected to grace. And I'm most likely to see myself as a devotee. Because then when I really feel in balance and the way I'm supposed to, the way I want to be, or the way I think I'm supposed to be at some level. So thank you, millions, thousands, thanks.
Yours, yes, and thank you, Phyllis, for articulating, as you always do, so beautifully, what your experience is. And I also want to say, I think there are many, many people here who've been doing these practices and, you know, all the other practices that you've done in your life. And I just want to say that to those who haven't been practicing for as long as some of you, that this experience is the fruit of practice and grace, and that this is why we do what we do, is because it changes us, and it changes us in such profoundly positive ways. So, you know, again, I want to say to everyone who said thank you, I want to say you are so welcome, so completely welcome, and I'm so grateful to you, and I just feel that it's a miracle that we get to do this in this world. So it's my intention to continue this and I'm obviously waiting for the guidance as to what form it will take, but we'll definitely be doing another 6-part series, scriptural series, on these issues, these questions that the Gita brings up, either through this text or through a related text, because I think, you know, many of us are finding that these great scriptures of the Indian tradition are profoundly relevant, and especially the ones like the Gita that, sorry, my phone just went off, that especially the ones like the Gita that actually give us practical understandings that we can use in our sadhana. So, okay, I'm waiting for the phone to stop. We're going to end in meditation, and we'll, of course, continue, because this is a continuing project, this project of meeting and engaging and unpacking the great teachings. So it's something that I think we want to continue doing in one form or another for the rest of our lives, and maybe later, maybe after. So I you know, want to offer you my commitment to that prospect, to that project, my ongoing gratitude to all of you.
and my conviction that the path is through, it unfolds, and it takes us to a goal that we may not even have been able to conceive of at the beginning, but which is waiting for us fully in our human and divine self. So let's close our eyes. Find the breath, the vertical breath. And as we did at the beginning, inhale with Om Namo Narayanaya, and the feeling, the light, the love, the spaciousness of Krishna flowing in with the inhalation through the crown, with the mantra flowing down into deep into the body, and then with the exhalation, allowing that energy to flow up and expand the heart. And we're going to meditate for a few more minutes, and then the call will end, and I want to encourage you to sit in meditation if you can, even after the call is done. So much love to each of you. Om Namo Narayanaya. With great love, we're closing the call. Please feel completely free and encouraged to sit for a while once you're offline. So much love to all of you. Namaste.